There we go. Thank you. This program is being recorded for broadcast and replay on our website, on Awakening Together Radio, and possibly on our YouTube channel. Please be aware that by speaking or typing on the board, you give consent to have your comments become a part of the recording. So we are here for the Tao Te Ching, Enlightened Leadership. And I'm going to play a song first. I don't know if it's a spiritual song or not. I've only heard it once. I'd have to listen more carefully to see if it is. But the reason I'm playing it is it's about the San Luis Valley, which is just over the La Vida Pass. Many of you have been to San Luis when you come here. So this is a song about the San Luis Valley, and it has lots of lovely, lovely pictures of the San Luis Valley. So I thought that you would enjoy just watching this video. So let me share my screen.
Birds of you, San Luis. goes to you, here it goes to me. A bird's eye view of San Luis. I'm a ghost to you, here it goes to me. A bird's eye view of San Luis. I'm a ghost to you, you're a ghost to me. A bird's eye view of San Luis.
That's it, the San Luis Valley, and at the Silence and Satsang retreat last May, we saw some of those wild horses. That was a lot of fun. We enjoyed seeing the wild horses. So we're here for the Tao Te Ching. And as far as I know, we're supposed to do verse 37. So I'll read verse 37 from Derek Lynn first. The Tao is constant in non-action, yet there is nothing it does not do. If the sovereign can hold to this, all things shall transform themselves. Transformed, yet wishing to achieve, I shall restrain them with the simplicity of the nameless. The simplicity of the nameless. They shall be without desire, using stillness. The world shall steady itself. So, of course, we're going to look at other translations as we always do. But one of the things I want to mention is this one says, again, it says the Tao is in constant non-action, yet there is nothing it does not do. And it says, if the sovereign can hold on to this, all things shall transform themselves. Remember that the Tao Te Ching was written for kings that led different kingdoms, warring kingdoms, actually, in ancient China. And the story is that Lao Tzu was an advisor to one of these kings. And here he's really advising stillness as the way to lead. I don't know if you guys saw this morning, but I ran across one of my old journal entries about the conflict that some people feel regarding spending time with family or spending time in spiritual practice. And when I ran across that, I felt to post it. Didn't even enter my head until I saw it this morning that I'm posting it right before the holidays, you know, when people will often be with families. I thought, oh, how smart was that? Of course, I didn't have that idea. So the one that was smart wasn't me. That's the point, right? Right? The one, you know, I was just reading through my journal, actually doing research, preparing for the Freedom from the Ego retreat, going over, you know, how I did it, because I've forgotten. And I ran across that and felt to post it and posted it. And it was timely, right before the holidays. But there was no intention in me, right? All of that just happened. But another thing that's interesting is that that particular journal entry, as you could tell at that time, I was really experiencing conflict between spending time with my young daughter and spending time in contemplation and journaling and also counseling people. I did a lot of one-on-one counseling back then. And I didn't know which to do. And the interesting thing is the answer that the Holy Spirit gave me was stillness. In other words, in short, what that journal entry says is in stillness, whatever needs to be done will be done. Whatever needs to be known will be known. But first, you have to bring yourself to stillness. That's really what that said. You know, if I'm sitting there in my mind thinking, you know, I had an appointment with this person for 2 weeks to talk on the phone, and I really need to be on the phone. And yet at the same time, feeling guilty because I haven't spent much time with Jasmine lately, and she wants me. You know, all of that noise blocks me from knowing what I am to do. In stillness, all things that need to be done are done. In stillness, all things that need to be known are known. And in a nutshell, that's exactly what this Tao teaching is saying. The Tao is constant in non-action, yet there is nothing it does not do. If the sovereign can hold on to this, all things shall transform themselves. Everything will take care of itself. Transformed, yet wishing to achieve, I shall restrain them with the simplicity of the nameless. So I think what he's saying here is, as people get all excited in their goals and their intentions and start wanting to achieve again, he'll remind them of the Tao. You know, he'll remind them that everything is achieved through the stillness. The simplicity of the nameless, they shall be without desire. Without desire, using stillness, the world shall steady itself. And of course, when it says the world shall steady itself, I'm reminded again of the swinging pendulum, right, that we've talked about before, swinging left to right, that creates duality. But in stillness, it settles, and then the energy of the Tao can be used to bring everything back into harmony. So let's look at Victor Mayer. This is verse 80 in Victor Mayer's translation. Oh, no, 81. Sorry, I need to turn the page. I still had it folded down on last week. 81. The way is eternally nameless. If feudal lords and kings preserve it, the myriad creatures will be transformed by themselves. After transformation, if they wish to rise up, I shall restrain them with the nameless, unhewn log. By restraining them with the nameless, unhewn log, they will not feel disgraced. Not feeling disgraced, they will be still, whereupon heaven and earth will be made right by themselves. I'm not real familiar with the term unhewn, so I'm going to look that up. My dictionary is not familiar with it either. It says no entries found. Let me try another dictionary. I'll have to go to the internet, though.
Regina?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, it's Ron. You can't see me. I'm on video. Unhewn means it's never been cut or touched by human hand.
Okay, that's good. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. So I shall restrain them with the nameless unhewn log. By restraining them with the nameless unhewn log, they will not feel disgrace. So one possible understanding of this that's coming is, I mentioned before that in this translation by Derek Lynn, it says, transformed yet wishing to achieve, I shall restrain them with the simplicity of the nameless. And I said, it sounds like he's going to remind them of the stillness so they return to it. But I think I'm hearing it differently now. Instead of reminding everyone of the stillness so that they return to the stillness, he's going to abide in the stillness himself, is what I'm hearing this time. In other words, he will be so focused on the Tao, so focused on the truth, that others will be naturally reminded by the Tao itself. So he doesn't even need to take action to remind everyone to stay with the Tao. He just stays with the Tao. I mean, isn't that amazing? And you can kind of see in that how there may be this temptation. You know, if you really believe in the Tao and you believe the Tao is the answer, that stillness is the answer, that everything is achieved through stillness, and then you have all of these people working for you, There's this temptation when you see them forgetting to remind them, right? And what I hear him saying now is actually all he would do is remain in the stillness, because for him, that would be an intention. That would be an activity. If he was to actively desire that they remember the Tao and then go about reminding them, he's actually stepping out of the Tao and pushing the pendulum himself. So it kind of reminds me of that line from A Course in Miracles, that the miracle worker's sole responsibility is to accept the atonement for himself. You know, and there's so many things I love about that sentence. I know I repeat it a lot. But one of the things I love about that sentence is it's the miracle worker's sole responsibility. Right? The sole responsibility is to accept the atonement for myself, or to remain in the stillness myself. I have no other responsibilities. And the other thing I love about that is it does say that this one, the one who takes this sole responsibility of accepting the atonement, this one is a miracle worker. Which means the energy of the Tao can move through that and bring things back into harmony. And it's so tempting for us to forget that. It's so tempting for us, for example, to think, oh, they've all forgotten. They've all got agendas. I need to remind them. Right? I need to remind them. But that's not what I'm hearing now. Listen to this. The way is eternally nameless. If feudal lords and kings preserve it, and the way they would preserve it is by being it, by living by that, right? If feudal lords and kings preserve it, the myriad creatures will be transformed by themselves. After transformation, if they wish to rise up, I shall restrain them with the nameless, unhewn log. By restraining them with the nameless, unhewn log, they will not feel disgraced. Right? If I was to go and remind them, you've forgotten about the stillness, you've taken on ambitions again, they may feel disgraced. But if I am staying with the Tao myself, and then a reminder just drops into their mind miraculously, they're not going to feel disgraced. Would you agree? By restraining them with the nameless, unhewn log, they will not feel disgraced. Not feeling disgraced, they will be still, right? And then so this miracle drops into their mind. They are reminded of the Tao, of the stillness of the Tao, reminded that their only responsibility is to accept the atonement for themselves. And they willingly step into that responsibility, and they become still. Whereupon heaven and earth will be made right by themselves. And once everybody, of course, is aligned with the Tao, then the corrective action of the Tao can come into being, and everything can be corrected. You know, one of the things they talk about a lot nowadays is climate change. And I don't pay a lot of attention to the news. I'm kind of a peripheral news person. but I did happen to catch a couple of news stories recently about the seriousness of the climate change and how within 40 years or so, you know, there could really be some very dramatic effects. Wouldn't it be interesting to find out how that could correct itself by us choosing just to stay in the Tao and in that trust, stay with the stillness, stay with the Tao. No, there's nothing that we need to do. And then just watch and see how it corrects itself. Wouldn't that be fun? Or, you know, we can even bring that home more, you know, within our own families. You know, what if we stop trying to change everybody in our own families, stop trying to get them to be the way we want them to be, let everything be as it is, and our only focus, our sole focus, is to accept the atonement for ourselves, to abide as the Tao, to remain still. Maybe there are some things in our family that would be corrected if they needed correcting. Maybe we would just come to see. Truth is, we had a selfish perspective in the first place. We wanted things our way, and actually things are just fine without us. Maybe they never needed corrected anyway, right? But I don't know if I told you guys this. I'm sure I probably did. I think I've probably told you everything about me. But when I, in my first 13 years with Ron, Ron and I have been together now almost 29 years. It'll be 29 years in February. But in my first 13 years with Ron, he was very jealous. He was a very, very jealous man. And, you know, like that Ron would not have been able to handle like George and this Ron and Jay coming to the retreat house and spending weeks with me there and not knowing what was going on. He wouldn't have been able to handle that at all. He wouldn't be able to handle me being friends with George and Jay and Ron. But what I did was I just focused on accepting the atonement for myself. I focused on letting go of everything in me that was upset. Did I ever tell you guys I went after him with a butcher knife once? I did. Got crazy. And it was the jealousy. It was the constant jealousy. And in fact, he even sometimes would get jealous of even my girlfriends if he felt like I was having, I think if he thought I was having more fun with them than I did with him. You know, it's probably something like that. But it was this constant jealousy. And I can't remember exactly what happened that particular day, but the jealousy arose again. And I went to the kitchen and I grabbed a butcher knife and I went right up to him like this, I'm going to kill you. And then it's like I somehow jumped outside of myself and saw the look on my face. And the look on my face reminded me of my 5-year-old niece who got really mad at her sister because she tore up her coloring book. But I saw all that hatred on her face, how she wanted to kill her 2-year-old sister. I saw that on my face, and that's what made me stop. It was shortly after that, actually, that I discovered Marianne Williamson, and you could say kind of began this spiritual path. But that was my first start. The first start was kind of a false start. Like I started, then stopped for a number of years and then came back, right? But that was before the first start. But my point is, his jealousy really bothered me, clearly, or I wouldn't have grabbed a butcher knife. And I felt restrained and imprisoned and not at all free. But once I did get on the spiritual path, the real start, the one that started in 2004, I began to focus on the error here, not the error out there. And I began to look for what the errors were in my mind. And as I began to allow my mind to be healed, as I began to, for example, let go of expectations that I had of him, you know, even the expectation that he not be jealous, that's an expectation. As I began to let go of my part in it, he actually naturally transformed. I haven't seen him be jealous at all in years. And that's even with Ron giving me, this Ron Rates, giving me birthday presents this year. I call Ron Rates to Ron, my boyfriend. I call Ron Rates my other Ron. And I can do that now. Isn't that cool? I can have another Ron that gives me birthday presents. Harmless little birthday presents, but you know, I couldn't do that before. So we really don't know what might be corrected around us if we take this seriously, right? This work seriously and stick to my sole responsibility is to accept the atonement for myself. My sole responsibility is to accept the atonement for myself. My sole responsibility is to accept the atonement for myself. Now, again, there's, you know, we want to be careful. We don't want to do that because we're hoping someone else will change. If we're hoping someone else or something will change, we aren't really accepting the atonement for ourselves. When we're accepting the atonement for ourselves, we are trying to become empty, completely empty. And how can I be completely empty and want his jealousy to stop too? Right? So the rule is, and when I say rule, I like rules. Not everybody does, but I like rules because rules tell me what my part is. Right? So the rule is you let everyone else be as they are. You accept them as they are, even terribly, terribly jealous, right? You let everybody else be as they are. And your responsibility is to let go of everything in you that gets upset or bothered by it. Your goal is perfect inner peace without anybody else ever having to change. Your goal is perfect inner peace without climate change having to change. Your goal is perfect inner peace without the government having to change. That's the only way to do this. But at the same time, you may experience things changing as a result of your work because you did allow the corrective action of the Tao some space. I notice there's a question, what if you witness your brother verbally abusing his children right in front of you? I can't answer questions like that because the true answer is, I guess I can't answer. The true answer is your responsibility first is to go to stillness, genuine, honest stillness, right? And then if there's something you're to say or do, you'll know it. Now, obviously, if somebody is in genuine, immediate harm, and you're there, you may have a role to remove them from that harm. But I can't give specifics about a situation that for me is imagination. You know? I mean, I don't really even know what you mean by verbally abusing his children. I will tell you, almost all parents say things to children that if we were sane, we wouldn't say. So is he just being normal? Normal ego parenting, you know, I don't know. It's an imaginary situation, but what you need to be careful about is your ego. No, I won't say that on the air, but, kids have survived worse. I would focus first on yourself. Focus first on your upset. You know, get yourself clear. You don't want to act from ego. You could end up being the most insane of all as you're trying to correct him. Just adding to the drama and the insanity in front of the child. You know, so sometimes some families think the person who screams the loudest wins. You know, so while this person's screaming, trying to get the kids to do whatever he wants the kids to do, and you're screaming at him louder, trying to get him to do whatever you want him to do, all that's happening is a bunch of screaming. So our goal is to get to stillness, to get to emptiness, to get to total acceptance, and that includes total trust that everything is okay. Right? That includes total trust that everything is okay. And then if there's something we are to do, we'll do it. But I think this is where people have trouble with the Tao. I'm trying to figure out how to put this into words. It's more like I feel the energy of it than have language for it. Where people get into trouble with the Tao is wanting to believe it to a point. But then there comes this situation where I have to take control. And what the Tao is really saying is we do best if we never feel that we have to take control. We do best if we always remain in stillness, if we always trust everything that is, if we always know that everything is okay, no matter what the appearance, and we stay in the stillness. That's when, if the Tao's corrective action is going to come in and correct, that's when it can. You know, I have taught this so many times, and I remember teaching it at a Course in Miracles conference where there were like 200 people in the room. And I had a few sessions, a couple sessions at least, with 200 people in the room each time. So probably 400 people total. And this is the teaching where people always stand up and argue with me when I teach it, you know, because they want to believe it to a point. But then there's this one, it's basically, I'll tell you what it's saying. I don't really believe it. I don't really believe that my only responsibility is to accept the atonement for myself. I don't really believe that everything and everyone will be okay if I just do my function. I don't really believe it. I'm willing to practice it, you know, in these some situations that I can handle if they don't work out the way I want. But in these other situations that I consider dire or important, nah, I don't believe it. That's when I got to step in and I got to take control. Someone once, it seems like they called me on the phone, but they might have emailed me. It was several years ago, but someone once contacted me after a teaching similar to this and said something like, and this is, I think it was the Taliban was in the news then. I think it was before ISIS. I think it was the Taliban. And this person says, so if the Taliban kidnapped you and you were in their prison and they were torturing you, you know, then what? Then what? Then wouldn't you do something? And the only answer that I had as a genuine answer was, I hope that if something like that occurred to me, I would dive deeply, deeply, deeply into this. You know, I hope that my response to something that extreme would be trying to be as still and as trusting and as nothing as I could be. Because I really think that's my only salvation. I mean, I don't know what would happen as a result of that. I don't know if they would kill me faster. I don't know if someone would suddenly have compassion and help me escape. I don't know if the torture just wouldn't be as painful as it was before to me. But I feel like my only salvation is this teaching. And so what I find myself doing is as things seem to get worse, I find myself clinging deeper to the teaching. Probably my fear about myself is that if things are going too well, I might forget about the teaching. If I'm, you know, things are going too easy, I might forget about the teaching. And in fact, I was just reading one of my Seven Steps journal entries this morning that addressed that. Let me go ahead and pull it up and I'll read it to you. Okay, here it is. It was my contemplation of quote 921. Let me share my screen because it's a little lengthy. And if you guys are like me, I listen better when I can see it too. And the eyes are also involved in the listening. Oops, I have the wrong share going on here. Let me change that. There we go. All right, so where's my Seven Steps book? 921. This is, I think, yesterday's quote. One of yesterday's quotes, I think. You have to make an enormous effort to realize the self. Listen to this quote. You have to make an enormous effort to realize the self. It is very easy to stop on the way and fall back into ignorance. At any moment, you can fall back. You have to make a strong, determined effort to remain on the peak when you first reach it. But eventually a time will come when you are fully established in the self. When that happens, you cannot fall. So this is what I wrote in my journal. Funny. Just before I read the quote today, I was thinking the same thing. I want and need to remember the goal without a single second of forgetting. I want to increase my focus on the tasks that I set forth in post 914B, which of course were meditation and things like that. We won't go back and look at that. Staying focused on awareness, that type of thing. I mentioned that I am motivated by happiness. I remember being deeply focused on my purification tasks when I was in the initial 5-year purification period. However, I wasn't happy. I was suffering. So I was very motivated towards happiness. Oh, wait a minute. This is a story. I started to write. I wasn't happy. I was suffering. So very motivated toward happiness. I remembered my goal throughout the day without a single second of forgetting. And that's the part that's just a story. It's not true. I remembered my goal throughout the day without a single second of forgetting. But that wasn't true in the beginning. In the beginning, I did forget for most of the day. I remembered during my morning practice, but as the day went on, I got caught up in my day and forgot entirely. It might not have been until Laurent came, which turned everything upside down, that I began to remember all of the time. I think, because I am motivated by happiness, that it's challenging for me to remain motivated when I'm already primarily happy. If the suffering is low-key and I can ignore it, I lose the intense motivation that is necessary to awaken. I was highly motivated when Laurent lived with me because my suffering became more intense while he was there. Before he came, it was low key, and so I forgot for most of the day. This need not be. I do not need to wait for suffering to get hot before I'm intensely motivated toward the goal. I want motivation now without requiring suffering manifestation. I want motivation now without requiring unhappiness first. I want motivation now as I joyously move toward the goal. How can I genuinely motivate myself to the point of intense motivation? Really intense? I want really intense, as intense as a ravenous Labrador retriever's desire for food. Of course, a ravenous Labrador retriever is suffering. Maybe the desire for truth realization becomes so intense that one is suffering without it, without truth realization, even if everything else is going well. Maybe we only reach beyond where we are when we absolutely have to have the next level of awakening. Maybe we are only motivated when we are unsatisfied. Maybe satisfaction is another obstacle to awakening. Do I want awakening enough to be unsatisfied without it? Is my present happiness distorted so that it's become an obstacle to awakening? And then I remembered this scripture. Only I changed it a little. Yes, this is Jesus speaking. Yes, I tell you, it is easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than for a satisfied man to enter the kingdom of God. And I said, oh, geez, let's look at that. And 921B, I've realized that my desire for truth has to be stronger than my desire for happiness. Because if it isn't, happiness can become an obstacle. Satisfaction can be a defense against the truth. This realization has kind of knocked me on my ass. I'm sitting here a bit flabbergasted by it all, but that's good. Still, I don't want to die a physical death without reaching truth realization. So, I'm willing to hike less, meditate more. And something in me is crying a little bit now. Moment of silence while it mourns what it perceives as a loss. And I give this life to God again. It's yours, not mine. You want to awaken. I submit. There's still some crying happening inside. The I love living this life is crying. All right, so I'll stop there. So the way that came about is for some people drop the spiritual practice when things get tough. And when things get tough, they try to take control. All I was saying was that my situation has always been different, and that when things get tough, that's when I dive deeply into the spiritual practice. I'm more concerned that when things aren't tough, it's not that I'm taking control. It's actually just that I'm too busy being happy to remember my spiritual practice. Too busy having fun and enjoying life to remember my spiritual practice. But the point is, and this is why I pay attention to other people's suffering. You know, Ramana Maharshi said that the greatest service you can render the world is your own self-realization. Well, since I don't suffer hardly at all, if at all, anymore, I pay attention to other people's suffering to help motivate me. You know, I read the stories about, and I say I'm sorry to people too. You know, I don't practice the whole Ho'oponopono. I can't even remember the whole Ho'oponopono, the four things. But I always say I'm sorry. You know, yesterday I was watching, I don't know if you guys know Patrick Frazee, but he lives here in Colorado, and he killed his fiance last Thanksgiving. And his trial was this week, and they have sentenced him to life without parole plus 156 years. He's somebody that they didn't want out on the streets again. But of course, since he was just sentenced yesterday, and since that happened right here, in fact, his fiance worked in Pueblo. You know, it was big on the local news yesterday. So I was watching as they were detailing, great detail, what happened. And it is gruesome. And I sat and listened to the gruesome details. And I allowed myself to feel what I felt as I listened to those gruesome details. I allowed myself to be aware of the suffering of the mother, you know, of the mother of the young woman who was killed. And I said, I'm sorry. And every time I do that, I recommit to my spiritual purpose. I recommit to being that miracle worker that's willing to have as my sole responsibility accepting the atonement for myself. I'm willing to trust that in ways I may never see, that as I do that, the corrective arm of the Tao is also operating, even though I may never see its effects. I trust what Ramana Maharshi said, that the greatest service you can render the world is your own self-realization. So, Shauna says, I think complacency is an obstacle. Question, am I tearing in this happiness or making it contingent upon the outcome? Oh, she says, Jay wrote that. I want to know, yeah, what's an Elvis sandwich? Susan says, peanut butter and banana. I don't know. You have to let us know what an Elvis sandwich is when you get a chance. But let me move on. We still have two translations to look at. So let me move on to Wayne Dyer. Again, what we've been talking about is that through the stillness, you know, the Course says this too, I need do nothing, right? Through the stillness, that's how correction occurs, not through us correcting. So here's what Wayne Dyer says. The Tao does nothing, but leaves nothing undone. If powerful men could center themselves in it, the whole world would be transformed by itself in its natural rhythms. When life is simple, pretenses fall away, our essential natures shine through. By not wanting, there is calm, and the world will straighten itself. When there is silence, one finds the anchor of the universe within oneself. Oh my God, I love that last sentence, and it wasn't anybody else's. I'm so glad we read this. You know, this just went to, you know, what this verse has been focused on. And again, it makes sense that this verse is focused on this, because again, it was written for kings and feudal lords, right? I will read it again. Definitely, I love it way too much not to. What this verse has been focused on so far is that if I do nothing, if I remain in stillness, if I accept the atonement for myself, that the Tao can correct things out there. And that's true, and that matters out there. But again, if we look at this as not being reality, you know, some people call that, you know, rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic. I don't know if that's, that might be a little sarcastic, because if you talk to anyone who's ever suffered and their suffering has ceased for some reason, it feels like a lot more than rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic. But the point is that this is a temporary life and that it's going to end anyway. That's where the Titanic thing comes in, right? So the point is there's something more than just relieving suffering in the world. And the other verses weren't touching on it. The other translations were only touching on, as I remain still, things can be corrected out there through my stillness. Now listen to what Wayne Dyer says. By not wanting, there is calm, and the world will straighten itself. You know, that's what the others said. But then he adds, when there is silence, one finds the anchor of the universe within oneself. You know, that when I hear about the anchor of the universe, what I think about is Bernadette Roberts' little hole in the piece of paper, the little pinhole. In you know, when I show you guys the tissue on Sunday night, I have one that just has a little pinhole in it. And I talk about how the ego is never 100%, that there's always a little hole there. So there's always access to the divine. But what I hear in this is that by being still, not only can things be corrected out there, reducing suffering in the world, but I find that little pinhole, which gives me access to the direct experience of the divine through stillness. Now, we already know that, but I love that it was added to this verse. By not wanting, there is calm, and the world will straighten itself. When there is silence, one finds the anchor of the universe within oneself. To me, that's what I would call the way out of illusion and into reality. One finds that black hole, that opening through stillness. So now we have two reasons to attempt to be still. One reason is, again, it may be helpful in the world, and lots of people are primarily concerned about that, and so they're very motivated by that. But the other reason is we find our way out of the illusion into known reality. And again, both fit with the sentence from the Course, the miracle worker's only responsibility or sole responsibility is to accept the atonement for himself. So as I'm focused on finding my way out of illusion into reality, I'm a miracle worker, and correction can still be occurring within the illusion. Sounds like a win-win to me, right? It's a win-win. But I have to be willing to take this teaching seriously. I have to be willing to say, when the rubber meets the road, my role is to become still. My role is to let go of everything in me that's not still. Let's look at Stephen Mitchell. The Tao never does anything, yet through it, all things are done. If powerful men and women could center themselves in it, the whole world would be transformed by itself in its natural rhythms. That makes me think either Wayne Dyer copied Stephen Mitchell or Stephen Mitchell copied Wayne Dyer. Because they got word for word, it's exactly the same there. If powerful men and women could center themselves in it, the whole world would be transformed by itself in its natural rhythms. People would be content with their simple everyday lives in harmony and free of desire. When there is no desire, all things are at peace. So I guess we'll just talk about that word desire for a second. Yay, the sun's coming out. That's good because what I get to do after this is go for a walk. And I like walking when the sun's out because it's a little warmer. So desire, you know, people get caught up on desire sometimes. In fact, the average person believes that if there is no desire, there's also no happiness. You know, like if I don't desire something, if I'm not wanting something better, I'm never going to get better than right here. And in other words, what's embedded in that is right here is not good enough as it is. Right? There's a lack embedded in right here, right now. This beautiful bedroom, well, you can't see it very well on here, but this beautiful bedroom, it's really nice. You know, this beautiful view, it's really nice, which you can't see very well either. So you'll just have to imagine the gorgeous mountains out there. But it would be better if, right? I mean, that's the average attitude in the world. And so there's a lack in this current moment. And in order to be satisfied, I need desire. If I don't have desire, I'm going to be stuck with this lack. That's really an unconscious thought in nearly every human. If you don't believe me, just pay attention to yourself. You'll get something that you desire. You'll get something new. And then you'll find something that you need to make that a little better, right? And then you'll find something that you need to make that a little better. And then you'll find something that you need to make that a little better. There's always an opportunity to improve upon this moment because this moment has lack in it. Now, if you look that straight in the eye, if this moment has lack in it, and this is a basic unconscious belief that you carry around, can you ever be satisfied now? Can you ever be at peace now? You know, desire and at least a little bit of angst, a little bit of not satisfied, a little bit of not quite comfortable, they go together. If it wasn't for the angst, there wouldn't be desire. If it wasn't for the lack, there wouldn't be desire. If it wasn't for some level of not completely satisfied, there wouldn't be desire. So now that I've said all of that, let's go back and look at what Stephen Mitchell says again. He says, let me start at the beginning. The Tao never does anything, yet through it, all things are done. If powerful men and women could center themselves in it, the whole world would be transformed by itself in its natural rhythms. People would be content with their simple everyday lives. Their bedroom as it is, right? People would be content with their simple everyday lives in harmony and free of desire. When there is no desire, all things are at peace. And that again, that's because when there is desire, there's an angst in this moment, this belief, something's not right, something's not good enough, right? So you cannot have desire and peace simultaneously. So there we go. We just uncovered an unconscious thought which is what this next retreat's all about. This freedom from the ego is all about uncovering these unconscious thoughts that we live with. And we just uncovered one. So watch for the belief in lack, which shows up as desiring to make something better. And then when you see it, drop to the stillness, because in the stillness, there's total satisfaction now. So the message from today primarily was, in the stillness, in the not wanting anything to be different than it is. Desire is wanting something to be different than it is, right? In the stillness, in the not wanting anything to be different, or we could call it in total acceptance of everything as it is, in the loving all method. Loving all. That word all is there. In that place, we are in total harmony with the Tao. And by being in total harmony with the Tao can actually correct anything that could probably use correction. But the funny thing is that has to happen without our judgment. And, you know, Jesus says this in A Course in Miracles near the beginning. He talks about how miracles need to be under Christ control. And he says that if you're choosing where the miracle needs to happen, right, he calls that severely misguided. You know, like if you're noticing that somebody needs a change of attitude or an improvement in their health or whatever, and so you're being still hoping that jealousy will go away, he calls that severely, severely misguided. And that's because that is actually pushing the pendulum. In a spiritual way, maybe, but it's still not being absolutely happy with everything the way it is and remaining still. It's making a judgment, deciding something needs to be different, and deciding to use spiritual practices to try and make that change. Severely misguided. All right, releasing the mic. Thanks for hanging out with me, guys.